Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim-up bar. Glass of Perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back to Perspectives. Glad to have you with us again tonight. And, you know, tonight's guest is Dr. Will Clower. You've seen him on The View with Barbara Walters and Dr. Oz several times. CNBC, just to name a few. Reader's Digest, Cosmo, The New York Times, ABC, USA Today. And he has two books out, The Fat Fallacy and The French Don't Diet, that have gotten much praise from everyone from Julia Child to the Minister of Health of France. He's a very interesting individual that is world-renowned in his work because he's really trying to change the lifestyle and the way we eat, as well as trying to help our children beat obesity. Dr. Clower, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on, Ashley.
Thanks for coming on. How's your night?
Oh, it's good. It's really good. We had my daughter's friends over, and so we had a little movie night with them, and then we made food together, and then we hung out, we ate, and so it was really, really a great Sunday.
Sounds like a great Sunday to me. I like that.
Yeah.
So a lot of our listeners have already emailed me and Facebooked and what have you, and their first question is, what do you believe are the fat fallacies, like the lies that we are told or believe with regards to dieting and in our diets?
You know, the first one is kind of a cultural perception. We have this in our culture. We have these ways of thinking about our weight and our health and our diet, and these are preconceptions that I guess our culture of health feeds us and we believe. And one of them has always been that if you eat fat, you get fat. You have to avoid all fat. And, you know, I loved hearing what you were just saying before the break, because you're absolutely right that one of the biggest fallacies is that not all fats are bad. I mean, I think about the fats in avocado, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome for you. So good for you. And actually, did you know this, that when you eat avocado, for example, any good fats, but let's just take that one, and you have that, let's say, as a part of a salad, all of the carotenes that are in the salad that comes from the vegetables are better absorbed by your body when you have healthy fats like avocado on board. With avocado specifically, you get 40% more of those carotenes when you have those healthy fats. Unbelievable. And all those carotenes are helping fight disease and fight cancer in your body. And so one of the biggest fallacies, I think, that took us down a wrong road for a long time in our country is that all fat is bad. And so it's not true that you eat fat, you get fat. It's true that when you eat bad fats and you eat too much of it, then you get fat. But that's more about me and you, Ashley, and less about the fat itself.
Okay, so let's say the avocado. And I know that, like, I've read some of your work as well, and I know that avocado is a good fat. Is there a limit to how much good fat that we should intake on a daily basis?
Sure, absolutely. There is nothing on this planet that we can't screw up completely, no matter how good it is. You know, I mean, there's nothing that's so good that we can't mess it up. I mean, name some. There's nothing that we can't overeat. Even water. You know, if you drink too much water, you get hyponatremia. You can die from that, Ashley. And so overconsumption is something that can happen with anything at all, including good fats, you know, including, like I said, even something as benign as water.
I didn't know that. How much water does it take to create that problem?
You know, there's about 4,000 factors that play into it. You know, if you are, if you're in a hot, arid, you guys, I mean, you're calling me, I'm in Pittsburgh, you're in Dallas. And so it's 5,000 degrees there. It's like the sun. And so you guys need to drink more water because you sweat more out.
Right.
So it would take a lot more for you to become hyponatremic than it would for somebody like me. You know, the place where people have noticed it most, actually, is with athletes. It's especially marathon runners who would drink and drink and drink and drink and drink. What would happen is that you end up diluting the electrolytes in your body. And that dilution of the electrolytes is where the problem comes in.
Hmm.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes good sense. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's nothing on the planet that you can't eat so much of it that you turn it into a bad thing rather than a good thing.
That's true. Moderation is golden.
Yeah, man. And another thing that we've done here in our culture of health, our misguided culture of health, is we have sort of a PR problem, and that stands for personal responsibility.
That's
we
awesome.
We made food the bad guy. We called food the bad guy, real food. When in fact, if you have two bottles of wine, it'll kill you. If you have two glasses of wine, it's great for you, which makes the goodness of wine as much about the thing as about me and you and how we handle it and we drink it, you know? And so that level of personal responsibility is, and this goes back to your first question, what are some of the fallacies that we have? And that's one of them, that the level of personal responsibility that we need to have as consumers is something that we have totally blown off, totally overlooked, and we need to remember.
That's really true. I was also thinking today, I went by this market here. It's called Central Market, and
Yeah. It's
a great store. And I was thinking, you know, if you have an addiction, though, to food, and
Yeah. You
walk into that market, it's just like anything else. When somebody goes and they have an addiction to alcohol or drugs,
Yep.
and you walk in there, it's
Yep.
like the candy store of what you're addicted to.
Right.
And it's all about moderation.
Exactly. And if you can't, I mean, I talk to people about, you know, so in the Mediterranean region, they have wine with their meal. It's considered a food. And so I have to talk to, when I'm on this side of the Atlantic, I'm talking to Americans, I have to caveat that because here we don't look at it the same way. Again, this is our culture of health. We look at a beer or wine or something like that. We look at it as an intoxicant, right?
Right.
That's why you get it by the pitcher. That's why you get it by the volume.
Hmm.
Whereas in other cultures, they don't do that. But here, we look at it as the sum of its pharmacological properties. It's an intoxicant, which makes it more problematic. And you're absolutely right. When we coach people, we've got to coach them, especially on things like that are so addictive, to focus on moderation first. And if you can't stop at 1 to 2, then don't even start. It's not important. It's just good for you.
That's true. Those are words to live by. It's very smart. You know, when we deal, and I'm sure you have, when you deal with clients that are considered possibly obese in nature as weight, do you use the same rationale for those people to lose weight as, you know, for somebody that might have to lose, let's say, maybe just 10 pounds?
Actually, yes. I do.
Okay.
There are like it's kind of like there's 30 factors involved, and you never know client to client, which of those 30 factors are at play. You know, I had a woman, Ashley, who walked into one of my courses, and she probably had 5 pounds to lose, nothing. She came to me after the first session and she said, "Dr. Clower, you know, I'm here because I'm an emotional eater. I eat for emotion. It's all in my head. It's not in my stomach." And I was like, wow, she had nothing to lose, you know, 5 pounds, nothing.
Right.
Normally, that problem comes with the person who has a lot to lose, you know? And so what I found is that you never can tell which set of problems each individual will have. And so what we do is we start with all of them with the same kind of method so that we can get to the problems that they have so that we can ultimately solve them.
Oh, that's so right. It's like dealing with the whole person like I was talking about earlier.
Totally.
It's like,
absolutely.
Yeah, and you don't even know why maybe somebody that only has to lose 5 pounds is an emotional eater, but it's getting to the heart of the issue.
Right. And a lot of times it's just it's something as simple as like a psychological reflex. You know, if you are surrounded by a certain environment, it can trigger a certain behavior. You know, antecedent behaviors can trigger later things that can happen, behavior change, you know?
That's true.
And if you don't handle that life situation then you'll never handle the problem, because these are people that find themselves, like you said, in that store with that stuff. And then next thing they know, they've got all this food at the house, because there were all these circumstances that led up to what eventually triggered the bad behavior. You have to find those triggers and find them early.
And get to the core of it, get to the core of the reason why they feel that way.
Which is the cause of the problem, not just the effect of the problem.
And that's so true, because then that alleviates a lot of things that people are dependent on, as well as addictions all come from one thing. And sometimes it can be as far back as childhood. Sometimes it could have been started a year ago.
Sure.
It's just
We're kind of, I always tell my people, we're kind of like goldfish. You know, we people, right, humans, we think about ourselves and we think, man, we are so smart. We have this huge brain. And yet, you know, Ashley, trivia quiz. What is the number one cause of death in goldfish?
Food, overeating.
Totally. You put too much food in front of them, and they eat until they hurt themselves. Well, guess what? Threatening to overtake tobacco is the number one preventable cause of death for humans. It is overeating, because we put so much food in front of ourselves.
Wow.
It's an orgy of food. We eat until we hurt ourselves. And so a big part of us learning to change this culture of health is to take those psychological reflexes head on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The reflex that says, just because it's on my plate, I've got to eat it. Just because I'm in this environment, I have to eat or overeat or eat the wrong food or blow off my exercise or any of that stuff. Those psychological reflexes have to be broken, and that's a big part of any lifestyle solution.
That is so true. You know, the other flip-flop, you know, we've talked about food and, you know, dealing with, you know, people that are addicted to food, but there is a flip-flop, and you talk about this, is that there are certain foods that actually help, that can help actually with depression.
Yeah, absolutely. I just have to say, my background is in neurophysiology, how the brain works. I got my doctorate from Emory in Atlanta about 1,000 years ago, and I immediately got a position to work in France for a couple of years, and that's how all this Mediterranean diet came about. But, you know, regarding depression, it's really interesting from the neuroscience research. There are certain foods and amino acids that can help to create depression and even thoughts of suicide. And one of those amino acids is tryptophan. You find tryptophan in some meats and like dairy, for example. And so they had this study where they had all of these people who were depressive and typically depressed. They put them all in the same environment, and they did one thing, actually. They gave them all the same food, but they took out that one amino acid, tryptophan. The probability that those people tried to commit suicide went up by like 40%.
Wow.
Everything else was the same. Everything else was exactly the same. The only thing that was different was that they took out tryptophan, this one amino acid that's in your food. And so something that we can do is to recognize that there are those trigger foods that are totally linked into your emotional state. And that it's not just all in your head. It's not just, you know, whatever. There are these nutritional triggers that are, as I said, linked into your emotions.
That's amazing. I didn't even think about that. Oh, I know tryptophan is in like turkey and stuff like that.
Right. Exactly.
It's amazing. And it's amazing you can take one amino acid away and it can cause that.
Right. Like how, and it's not, those weren't in sort of quote unquote normals. Those were in people who already tended toward depression. But I mean, I read that study and I think, okay, I see. So given that a person tends toward that sort of emotional state, maybe bipolar or something, this just pushes them a little bit further in that direction.
Right.
For me and you, who may be a little more toward the mean, in the middle, maybe what it would do is not push us toward attempted suicide, but maybe just make us sad or depressed or down or less likely to be positive in our lives, you know? And so, yes, you can manipulate the amino acids, but in our daily lives, if we eat those real foods, we tend to get the amino acids we need to have a positive emotional state.
Is there any foods that you would tell our listeners that have, you know, tryptophan in it or things that have a lot of nutrition values that can give you this better feeling?
Well, the ones with higher tryptophan are the ones, typically meat, all meat does, all dairy does. So when I advocate for meat, what I tell people is that you should go lighter. In other words, lean on fish and chicken. Turkey is a great meat. If you're going to have a steak, but make sure it's really good. And it should be like grass-fed, for example. Mm-hmm. And but it should be the vast exception. When I look at healthy cultures, like the people in the Mediterranean region, they eat red meat, but it's like the exception to the rule, like the vast exception, like maybe once a month. That's what they do. And so, you know, it's funny, too, with like red meat. If you have a steak and it's from a steak that is grass fed, then you have, I forgot what the number is. It's like 5 or 6 times the amount of omega-3 fatty acids, which is good for your heart, by the way, as you do. And when you have like corn fed beef. Mm-hmm. And so the rule that we apply, if you want to adopt the habits of the Mediterranean people, healthy people, is first, if you're going to have meat, great. Just make sure that you lean on fish and chicken and have the other ones sparingly. If you're going to have them, make sure you treat it like everything else, high quality, low quantity. Did that make sense?
Total. No, total sense, because I think a lot of times people overeat, obviously, like we talked about, or the quality is very low. And it has hormones, and it has all kinds of stuff in it that we don't even know what it is.
Right.
But
hang
with us. Actually, we're going to go to break here in a second. When we come back, Dr. Clower is going to be talking to us about all kinds of benefits of chocolate. He's going to be talking to us about why we should eat more of it. I think this is a good concept we all want to hear more about. And also, when we come back at the top, we'll have Jake Busey doing the Busey Minute on Sunday. So stick with us, and we'll be right back in just a few short minutes, and we'll find out all we want to find out about chocolate.